This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
This is show business. Show business. Take care of your business and treat it like it is. If you want to have a successful business, treat it like a successful business. You want to treat it as a hobby? Do whatever the hell you want to do. And I know that's not, I know we're kind of joking around, but
no, that's great to hear,
yeah,
though.
You have the show and you have the business. You've got to equally balance both of them. It's a business. This is the business of Joel Byers. This is the business of Eric Lawrence. This is the business of Mr. Showtime. Mm-hmm. This is your company.
Hot Breath. What is up, Hot Breath of Verse? Welcome back to the Hot Breath Podcast, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. I am your host, comedian Joel Byers, and I am so thrilled to welcome you to Hot Breathisode number 192. Yes, we have had such a great run of this new series we did called hashtag Road Trip Tips, where we broke down how to build your own tour, how to sell merch, how to do everything getting you out on the road and touring. And I thought this would be the perfect comic to complement that series. Our guest today is an OG comedian. This is a comedian right here. This is like a 30 plus year performer, businessman. He breaks down all the game. And I can tell you, and doing almost 200 interviews, I have learned just as much working with this guy and just speaking with him off the record than I have in my interviews where I've sat down with comedians. The first time we worked together at the Comedy Catch, I was blown away by his show and just his fan base. This guy was having people come back 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times to see him. He has an engaged fan base that every comedian wants. And he was willing, he actually volunteered after we met. He was like, all right, on Sunday, let's go get lunch. And we met up and he just helped me out so much. He helped me get extra work. He shared so much comedy wisdom. And in the back of my mind, I was like, I know next time we work together, we're going to make a podcast together. And this is the first of many I'm sure we'll do together. But he said, I wasn't sure we were going to be working together or when we're going to be working together again. And then as we were closing out and getting our checks in the weekend, he said pretty much to the booker, hey, let's go ahead and have Joel come back when I'm here next time. He is the prime example of just what comedy is and what comedy should be and how comedians should treat each other. We are a community. And he's a prime example of no matter how far along in your career, you're never too far along to just help a fellow comedian. So I hope you can take that with you as well. But this is a raw interview. We did it at the same restaurant we met up before the first time we had worked together. So the audio was recorded on my phone. It's raw audio, but it's that nitty gritty, kind of like that Drew Thomas interview we did at the Waffle House, where it's just that raw comedy talk. This episode is what Hot Breath is all about. It's featuring Eric Lonas, a Chattanooga comedian who I've worked with several times. And I hope you enjoy it and find it valuable. Stay tuned in the outro for a very special announcement I have. But let's get right into this interview. I don't want to hold you up anymore. So with all that being said, if you enjoy this, share it with your fellow comedians. And there's only one thing left to do, and that is inhale a hot breath with David,
all right.
Mr. Showtime, Scott.
Yep. I already hit record over there. Hey, y'all.
Hey, y'all.
All right, so here we go. This is going to be so good. I'm so excited. Welcome back, Hot Breathverse.
Hot breath.
We have a... We have a raw comedy talk today. I'm in Chattanooga right now working with Mr. Showtime for the second time. We went out, did our little ritual where the headliner takes the feature out last time we worked together, and this guy was full of so much information about comedy. I knew he would be the perfect mentor for the Hot Breathiverse. He asked me to come back work with him again. Luckily, I don't know why, but we're glad and we're all better for it. So prepare yourselves for a raw comedy talk. We have Eric as well. Eric Lonez?
Yes.
How you pronounce it? He was hosting last time we were here in Chattanooga. He wanted to come out here and learn from Mr. Showtime as well. So prepare to take notes. Just learn. This is the side of comedy most people don't get to hear and see. So that being said, gentlemen, welcome to the Hot Breathiverse.
Hot breath.
So I'm so excited to actually record our talk this time, because last time we talked...
You took notes.
I was taking notes.
You were taking notes.
You were so generous with not only information, but you shared like Booker information and just so many tips. And after last night, I'm glad we're doing this, because like... It's funny, in doing this show, I've interviewed people 20 years in who are even saying, I'm just now figuring this out. But as we start in comedy, we're like, I'm 9 years in. And I'm like, oh, at 9 years, you're going to be bulletproof. And then last night, I had two great shows Friday night. And then Saturday, both shows were just like pulling teeth. And I was like,
which is unusual, because usually it's the other way around.
Oh, the Fridays usually the rough one?
Fridays are usually play a little bit harder, a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
Especially late show Fridays. But yeah, I blame your shoes.
people were roasting my shoes.
Yeah. Your shoes. I don't know what it is, but yeah, you, I'm trying to think. I told you last night after the show, I had more respect for you after the show you did, because you stuck with it. You didn't bail. You didn't change a single line. You said, this is my material. I'm going to do it, and I'm not going to change who I am. And I had a lot of respect for that, because a lot of comics, when they are on stage and they are bombing or they are getting nothing in response, or just silence, they'll start doing crowd work. They'll start dropping F-bombs.
Right.
They'll start maybe turning on the audience. You were like, I'm just going to do my jokes. I'm just going to do the jokes. And you stuck with it. And that, to me, is a sign of a pro. That's what a real pro does.
Okay.
A real pro goes, I'm doing my show. Which means to me that you are a true comedian. Because the ones who are not true comedians, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, I'd probably get some hate on this, are the ones that all of a sudden they're bombing and they just change who they are. They go, I'm just going to throw everything out the window and I'm going to change who I am. I go, that's not... that. If that's who you are, that means you're changing for every audience.
Right.
And you want the audience to change for you. You want to manipulate the audience into your way of thinking, not the other way around.
Wow, okay.
So great. I mean, it wasn't just one show. It was both shows.
It was both shows, after, man. It was both.
After the show, after the late show Friday, Saturday, you walked off stage, and you're a tall guy. You're like 7'2". You and Manute Bull can look eye to eye. And you walk back, and you took your T-shirt that you sell, and you just threw it. Bridget's on stage giving the introduction, you know, and you just take the shirt, you just threw it and go, I hate comedy.
Yeah, I did. I said, I'm quitting comedy.
And I looked at you and I said, it's not that bad, hoping that you would believe me.
No, he's back there putting job applications down on his phone.
Dude, I was bad, man.
It wasn't you that was bad. You did the exact same jokes on Friday and Thursday and killed. You were killing Thursday. You killed Friday. You killed Friday both shows. And the Friday late show was not an easy crowd. And you killed Thursday. You killed both shows Friday. You didn't change a single joke between Friday and Saturday. And yet the crowd, and I think I told you the reason why I thought the crowd had sort of turned on you, and not turned on you, didn't buy into you, was because I felt like what you were talking about on stage felt like you were condescending to the crowd, because I think it hit too close to home, which is not a bad thing. You just have to learn when you walk on stage, and this is what every comic needs to learn, is that you just don't walk on stage. Before, I've been doing this for 26 years, and even when I was doing my world record, even when I was doing cruise ships, even when I was doing corporate shows, whatever, I walk the room. I look through the room. I get in the rafters. I go through the door, and I look, go, what kind of crowd do I got? I'm listening to them talking before the show. I'm listening to see what kind of group they are. And I don't think enough comics are doing enough pre-show research to know. You've got to know your crowd. You have to know your audience. And I think if you had done a little bit more of that, you would have started your show with less of the accent, Sunville, meth stuff, and started more with your wife stuff. Because all your wife stuff and about being married and outsourcing and all that stuff, that killed. That was work. As soon as you start talking about, you know, I'm from Shum,
right.
You know,
yeah.
They were like, wait a second, that's how I talk now. Are you making fun of me? And that's how you started the show. And I think that's why they were like, I think you hit too close to home.
Oh, so it's almost had to get them on my side before I could take them there.
You always have to get them on your side first.
Okay.
I mean, you've seen my show now, what, 12 times?
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, and I look different. I dress different. My show is more of a Broadway show than a stand-up show. And I've got to get them on. I got to get every artist on my side within the first 45 seconds. Because they don't buy into what Mr. Showtime is on stage. They're not going to buy into anything. And I'm on stage for over an hour. In some cases, an hour and 20 minutes, depending on where I'm performing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't buy into the first 45 seconds, that's a long hour 20. So if you see the way I open my show, I open my show like a rock concert. I love bands like Kiss and The Police, and they open their shows with something big. Their first song is a hit.
Right.
Their first song is a well-known hit.
Mm-hmm.
So I go on stage as if it's a rock concert. So people are like paying attention, like, what are we seeing here? So I get them, I grab them. That first joke I do is always something local. It's always something local. I'm not making fun of their town. I'm actually making fun of myself for not understanding the local, you know,
right,
habits.
Right, right, right.
I'm poking fun of myself, but the crowd goes, hey, he knows our town. Got them. They're mine.
Mm-hmm.
They're my crowd. And then I can do whatever I want after that. I can shove marshmallows in my mouth. I can put a straitjacket on. I can dance around in spandex.
I can strip.
I can do whatever I want.
What is, like, the worst, like, show you've had? Because I'd imagine with all these moving parts, you've probably had some where there's technical difficulties or wardrobe malfunction or something. Like,
what was it? It wasn't the worst show, but what was it? Friday? Was it first show Friday? The lights just went out during my show.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
really? I was outside. I guess.
Yeah, I think you were outside that. Smoking and doing meth.
They treat you that. Yeah.
Thank you.
It was research. Okay.
Yeah.
Green means mac and cheese.
Thank you very much.
Can I get you guys anything else? Maybe some napkins.
Yeah, napkins would be great.
Yeah, we're doing a podcast.
Yeah, we're doing a podcast.
Yeah, we are.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know about these guys. Yeah, we're at a place called Rib and Loin.
And
I know when you live in Atlanta, you don't get anything close to barbecue in Atlanta. So,
if they have to ask if you're famous, I guess you're not.
No. I went out to lunch with Dave Carroll. He's a newscaster here in Chattanooga. Uh-huh. And went out to lunch, went to the Cracker Barrel. And we both got recognized at Cracker
Really?
Barrel. Yeah, we both got recognized at Cracker Barrel. And the lady who recognized us, the two ladies, they wanted to take the picture with me, not with Dave.
I
felt really bad about that. I was like, we want to take your picture. Dave goes, I've had you. Oh, no, not you. It's a Showtime.
So,
but anyway, like, so technical difficulty.
The worst, like, or bomb, because, you know, I get comments in here talk about getting booed or, like, epic bombs. So, like, 26 years, you had to have some that you just unforgettable.
Well, yeah, we've all had bad shows.
Right.
And when you're a young comic, you remember the bad shows. But after 26 years, I try to go back, what was the last truly bad show I had? And I don't know, I actually have to go back a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was actually here in Chattanooga at the old club, the old Comedy Catch. They moved it. And it was a late show Friday. And for whatever reason, the crowd just hated me. Just hated me. I mean, it was pure silence for an hour. And I couldn't figure out why. I honestly could not figure out why. And I walk off stage, and Michael, the owner, comes up to me and goes, "Wow, they hated you."
Yeah, that's my.
I don't know why. And he goes, "I don't know why either. I have no idea why this crowd just." He goes, "I don't know why they're here." I mean, maybe they thought it was an Al-Anon convention. I don't know. Maybe they thought this is a drug awareness, or this is like a, you know, they came to see Jesus. I don't know what they were expecting, but we weren't here for comedy.
Are you doing your straitjacket material in the dancing?
Well, no. This is about 12 years ago when I first performed here.
Oh.
And I wasn't doing. I was the Midnight Swinger back then.
Midnight Swinger.
That was my original character.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Gosh.
So and they just hated me. And I thought for sure Michael was never going to book me again. I was like, you know, he's never going to book me again. But the thing that club owners know is that one bad show does not, you know, make your career.
Thank goodness.
And now if you go to the Comedy Catch website, Michael actually has manager guarantee next to my name.
I saw that.
Yeah, like if you do not have a good time at my show, he will give you money back. And out of all the comics he has ever booked in almost 30 years, I'm the only one who's ever done that for.
Wow.
Michael don't get money back for nothing.
Yeah.
So Midnight Swinger was like just like material?
No, Midnight Swinger, I've always been a character comedian.
A character comedian,
I've
okay.
always been. I've never been, quote unquote, a stand-up.
Okay.
I've always been a character. I've always believed that character comedy, character-driven comedy was more my forte. You know, like Steve Martin was a character, the wild and crazy guy. Groucho Marx, Charlie Chaplin, these are characters. And I always believe that my strength was portraying a character. I'm a big fan of Kiss. And I've always enjoyed Kiss. And the way they put on a show with these characters, the Starman, Spaceman, Demon, Catman, and they embody these characters on stage. Well, I didn't come up with a name. My friend Kirk Nolan, who was my mentor, came up with the name Midnight Swinger. We developed this really crazy Vegas kind of guy. And we built this show around the Midnight Swinger character. And I did it for 15 years. And I took it as far as I could go. And about 5 years ago, maybe it was more like 20 years after Midnight Swinger. About 5 years ago, I took it as far as I could go. And I realized I got to make a change. So I called up some really close friends. And I said, listen, I'm going to completely destroy my show. I'm going to break it down to nothing. I'm going to get rid of everything, break it down to its basic. How would you describe me in one or two words? How would you describe me, David Scott, in one or two words? And they all came back with either some variation of showtime, showman, you know, it's the show. And it was always show. Show was in the name. So I started thinking. So I went online and started searching Showtime, Mr. Showtime, I am Mr. Showtime. And it turns out no one owns I am Mr. Showtime. No one owns the website. No one owns the Twitters. No one owns the Instagram or the Facebook. So I got it. I got the website, IamMrShowtime.com. Started doing all this Mr. Showtime, and the show just completely blew up again. It started up again. I started getting, you know, more and more bookings because people were like, when you see Mr. Showtime on the marquee, it stops you. Like, well, what's that?
Right.
What's that? So.
And do you feel like most comedians are a character, even if it's a character themselves, in a sense that, like, it's funny you mentioned you've made a shift in your show because I'm doing that and I'm trying to get more autobiographical and more talking about me and my origin story and trying to create material that really only I could say.
Yes.
That, like, I couldn't just plug into
that's another. Important.
Okay.
Doing material that is unique to you is the most important thing in comedy. Because the worst thing you want to be is generic. The worst thing you want to do, great, thank you. The worst thing you want to do is go, if Joel Byers gets sick, we can replace him with this guy.
Right.
And no one would know the difference.
Right.
That's the worst thing you want to happen to you. You've got to be unique. You've got to be who you are. Your material has got to be unique to you. No one else can do your stuff. So what the sense I get from you, and I think I may mention the first time I saw you, is that you have this storyteller approach to comedy. You are telling stories about your life, be it where you're from, your wife, you know, whether you have kids or not. You're telling a story.
Okay.
I can't tell you jokes. I couldn't tell jokes about having an Asian wife. I don't have an Asian wife.
Right.
Those are yours.
Mm-hmm.
So what you need to do, in my opinion, is expand on that and get rid of the generic, you know, accent-y, you know, we don't sound like that, you know, type of, you know, the kind of stuff that you're doing, like the shumble, you know.
Type but that
of
is literally where I'm from.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But it's not unique to you.
Oh.
See what I'm saying?
Wow.
It's not unique to you.
Wow.
It's unique to, it's everybody. What's unique to you? That is what sets you apart.
Exactly. How you met your wife.
Dude, that's gold. Every comedian needs to remember that.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the great comedians, they do stuff that if you hear someone do, let me put it this way. I don't know how old or young your listeners are or your watchers are, but there was a time when Eddie Murphy was the greatest stand-up comic in the world. Mm-hmm. In the world. And he did a bit about wanting to get the ice cream truck.
Yeah.
All right. I got my ice cream. I got my... Anybody else that tried to do that joke or that bit, everybody goes, Eddie Murphy. It was unique to him. Was the situation unique? No. Was the way he did it unique? Yes. That's what made it. That's what made him great. That's okay. What made him legend.
Okay.
So you've got to do, if you're going to do something that is going to be general, you better make it unique to you. I mean, I talk about when I'm on stage, did someone just fall down?
No, there's old people around us, yeah, with the lunch crush.
I mean, so, like, I do jokes, you know, about the station wagon or lawn darts or, you know, I do a bit about McGruff the crime dog. Mm-hmm. I'm not the only one that does a joke about McGruff the crime dog. The way I do it, if someone tries to do it like me, they'll go, that's Mr. Showtime. That's what you need to work on. That's what you need to focus on. Material that's unique to you.
Okay. Because that's been my big shift is like, as I'm approaching 10 years in this, is like, all right, I want to be saying something. I want people to be learning about me because,
yeah.
And since I've started to make that shift, now I'm getting people coming up after the show, like, not saying you're funny, but like, that's funny. Like, they're like, oh, the thing you said about kids is just like,
yeah.
Like, I'm starting to get those reactions,
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
So that's how you know you're on the right track, I guess.
Yeah, I think, I said this to you before. I think you need to be focusing a lot more on the trophy husband line of your show, because I think that is unique. And I think you can actually have that as a jumping off point of almost every bit you do. But you got to hit it. I don't know if you believe it. When you're on stage, I don't know if you actually believe it. Sometimes you see a comic on stage tell a joke, and you know they don't believe in the joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know it. You said, yeah, he's telling a joke, but the audience isn't laughing, because the audience will know a fake. The audience will know a fake quick. And they'll go, yeah, I don't believe him at all. And I think when you do the trophy husband bit, when you're selling it, you sell a ton of t-shirts after the show. I've seen you sell a bunch of t-shirts because,
yeah,
people are going, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because women will buy their shirts for their husbands. Men will buy it because they think it's funny for themselves.
Yeah.
You know? But if you were to make that the centerpiece of your show and then build off of that, you can go all over the place because they'll know you as the trophy husband. And that is, and it may be kind of corny, but who cares? Your idea is to be remembered.
Right.
You want people to go, who was that guy we saw who did the trophy husband bit? They don't want to go, who was the guy who was wearing the Dockers and the shirt? What was that? They don't care about that. They don't remember that. They remember something you did.
So it's comedians thinking about, like, how you asked your comedian friends, if you could sum me up in, like, a couple of words. It's almost comedians taking the time to ask friends or look at themselves.
Right.
If I were to sum myself up in a couple of words.
Right. Yeah. It's hard to see the forest for the trees. When you're talking about yourself or try to be honest with yourself, it's really hard. Because we don't see what other people are seeing.
Right.
So you have to have an outside, people you trust, people that you really know are going to have your best interests at heart. She's all confused. She's like, why is there a camera? No, we're gonna do a slip and fall here, but
we're gonna go viral. Let me know.
So, some people that you trust, people that you know that are going to have the best interest at all. Because let's be honest, a lot of comics are trying to sabotage other comics. I don't care what they say about this industry. This is a very backstabbing industry. And so you've got to know who your true friends are.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ask your true friends, describe Joel Byers. How would they describe you? You know? And then take that to heart and listen to what they're saying and then go, okay, what am I doing wrong? You know, because I love the stuff about when you go to Maryville College and you do 60, it was 60% women to 40% men. Then you found out that 60% of the women wanted 60% of the women.
Right.
That's a great line. That's a really smart line. I love that stuff. That stuff is so much funnier than the, you know, the whole, you know, reform Southerner, you know, I'm a recycled, you know, white trash type of thing, you know.
And all that is like somewhat newer and me being a little more, because literally, like, it took me a while to even just say, like, I'm from a trailer. It just hurts to say that.
Yeah, but the way you say it is funny. You say it's like an Airbnb and a, what is it?
An Uber slash Airbnb.
Yeah. It's a great line.
So I'm just like exploring my origin story and where I'm from,
right.
And it sounds like that's just a shade of it, or some of like the honky-tonky stuff isn't.
Well,
kind of.
Again, I think that material hurt you last night because there weren't a lot of African Americans in the room last night. It was all.
When I tried to go into that, I was grabbing for straws.
Yeah, I know, I could tell.
That whole show, I was just like, next joke.
Yeah.
I was in an inner panic, like.
Yeah.
The two shows last night were honestly the most uncomfortable I've been on stage in a long time.
Well,
both of them.
To your credit, you didn't look it.
I quivered at one point.
One, you didn't look it, and that's what impressed me. I knew you were panicked because when a comic of 26 years is a younger comic on stage, just really struggling, we see the eyes. We see your eyes,
right.
And your eyes started glazing over. Because I know in your mind, you're going through the Rolodex of jokes in your head.
Oh my god!
And you're like, you're talking, but you're having an out-of-body experience. You're talking, we hear you talking, but you're in a monologue.
Totally. And like, what was like a 30-minute or what was a 5-minute bit all of a sudden becomes 30 seconds.
Yes.
And you're like, on to the next, on to the next. Like, I pulled out something like from way deep I hadn't said in like several years on the second show. I was so desperate. Like, I pulled out this old sexting joke I hadn't said in literally probably like 6 years.
Right.
It just like popped out of like desperation.
Right.
I was like, I don't even want to say this, but I am grasping for straws right now.
That's why, and you'll learn this as you do this, get in deeper in the business, you always have a joke in reserve. And if things are going bad, that's your reset joke.
Okay.
I'm telling this joke, I'm going to reset the narrative, I'm going to get them all back. Doesn't matter what the joke is. It could literally just be a joke. Something that resets the crowd. It's like, you know it kills, there's no way it's not going to work.
Uh-huh.
And that's your reset joke. And you don't do it in your show. That is break glass in case of emergency joke.
That is gold. Oh my God.
Always have a reset joke.
Have a reset joke.
And to joke that you cannot have in your show. Because if you're bombing and you throw your reset joke in there in the midst of bombing, it's going to bomb also. You got to stop, take a breath, take a drink, and then hit your reset joke and then start again. It's almost like saying, I'm on stage for 30 minutes. The first 10 suck. Okay, reset. Let's start this over with this 20-minute set.
Okay.
You almost forget the 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that happen. I mean, and we've all had rough shows where we have to do a reset. And I do have a reset joke. And I don't do it unless, and I haven't done it this week. I haven't done it in a while. But there's a joke that I have that if I need to reset, it's in my back pocket and it kills. It just kills. And once the audience is laughing, they forget. Audiences are so forgiving if you try to be funny again. If you're bombing for 10 minutes and then you reset and then the crowd starts laughing again, they will forget about the 10 minutes. You know who else is going to forget about the 10 minutes? The club owner is going to forget about the 10 minutes. They want to see what's the crowd like when you walk off stage. What's, you know, if you walk off stage to thunderous, late show last night, and I even told you this, that was not an easy crowd. Late Show last night was not an easy crowd. Even I was, my goal last night was to just talk louder than them. Because they weren't heckling. And they were talking about my show to each other. They were just so loud. So I had to keep on struggling and fighting to keep their attention.
Yeah.
And when I was done, the crowd's on their feet, they're laughing. You forget about the struggle that dealt with. Because I was doing a joke all week about the highway here. We have to come to a complete stop before you can merge onto the highway. That joke's been killing all week. Late Show last night, Late Show Saturday night, silence. And I'm like, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Uphill.
You know, so, and I knew, okay, they didn't laugh at that. Like, okay, that's weird. I did the joke about, you know, the local meteorologist, started getting it back on my side, started doing the joke about being, you know, finding out that I'm officially middle-aged. They started coming back to me, and then I did the, and then I knew where I was going to get them. I knew where I was going to get them. As soon as I started talking about Smokey the Bear and McGruff the Crime Dog mm-hmm. and Corduroy Pants, then I had them. And then I lost them again because the checks got dropped. And the crowd goes, oh my God, we're alcoholics.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You know? We need to have a conversation. Yeah.
That is funny you mentioned them, the audience being forgiving. And I think comedians, we can get stuck in our head on like, if one joke misses, then we start to shrink on stage. And if that joke misses, we start to shrink. But it's this is one of the best compliments I've had when you had told me after the first show, it's like you kept fighting. What I noticed
is that a lot.
Some jokes hit really hard, and then the jokes they weren't connecting to didn't hit at all,
right.
But they were still forgiving me and giving me that next chance.
Right.
Maybe it's important for comics to just remember, just because this joke doesn't work doesn't mean the next one won't.
I honestly believe in my heart that the audience is there because they want to laugh. They're not there to cry. They're not there to be angry. They're there because they want to laugh. Whatever reason. They love comedy. They had a bad day. They got free tickets. Whatever. They're there because they want to laugh. And if you have a bad joke, they're like, okay, we're here to have a good time. He's going to get the next one.
Okay.
The crowd wants you to succeed. There's no doubt in my mind, the crowd wants to see every comic kill. They want to laugh for 90 minutes. And I think that is very important to remember when you're on stage, that if you're bombing, don't turn on the crowd. The crowd is there because they want you to succeed, because mm-hmm. they want to have fun. They're paying money. They're buying drinks. They want to have fun. It's like going to a movie and the movie sucks. You walk out disappointed. No one goes to Avengers Endgame hoping that it sucks.
Right.
They
right.
go because I hope this is a good movie. I went and saw it yesterday. I really want to be a good movie. It wasn't. The reviews lied to me. It was cute. It wasn't a tour de force. But I want to be great, you know. It wasn't. I walked out disappointed going, man, I probably should have gone and seen something else. I didn't waste my money hoping to have a bad time. People come to a comic book, they want to have a good time. So if you have a bad joke, or the joke doesn't work on you, don't. It's like a relief. A friend of mine told me it's like being a relief pitcher in baseball. If you have a bad game and you blow a save, you're going to be called on the next day to come out again. You don't think about what the save you blew the day before.
Okay.
You go out there again. You clean the slate. And then you go out and do it again.
Is the booker, the club owner for this instance, like, that was another part of, like, I see him in the back watching, and I'm like, that's just one more layer of stress I'm adding to myself in the show. Like, how serious, like...
That is a legitimate issue. it's a legitimate concern.
Right.
When it comes to the crowd or the owner, you know, Michael has known me for, I don't know, 12, 13 years. I've never seen him laugh at one of my shows, ever. Because he just sits back there and watches. He observes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Michael's not a comedian, but he knows comedy. It's like Simon Cowell said, I'm not a singer, but I know when I hear a good singer.
Okay.
Michael can't do jokes, can't do comedy, but he knows what good comedy is.
So is he watching me like, well, he's still fighting, or is he like, he's ruining my show, right?
No. You're not. He's not thinking you're ruining the show, not at all.
Okay.
Because Michael knows above all else that sometimes, and this is going to be kind of crazy to say because you never hear this very often, sometimes crowds just suck.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And everybody says, never blame the crowd, never blame the crowd. And for the most part, they're right. You never blame the crowd. I never blame the crowd for a bad show. But sometimes crowds just suck. Am I blaming them? No, they just suck.
Okay.
And you had an issue late show Saturday. More late show Saturday than early show Saturday. I thought early show Saturday you weren't as bad as you thought you were. I think if you were, had recorded, mm-hmm. you would realize, because I recorded part of your set accidentally. you were not as bad as you thought you were on first show Saturday. Late show Saturday, things got off the rails when you did a joke. The two most popular languages are Spanish and Chinese. And you go, who here speaks Spanish? And some... I'm not going to say who goes, no.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's like going, okay, we know you clearly want to build a wall.
No, and then he yelled, this is America.
Yeah.
I just kept going.
Yeah.
But that was just.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And then he goes, no, this is America. And I just I kept moving past it. But
right,
like,
good for you.
I was just like,
good for you.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I look, I have six tags of this. I can't do anymore because nobody wants to hear them.
Well, again.
And then you pull the chute on that joke.
And then that's where, like, know your audience, know a thing. But
yeah.
A guy said that, and you're thinking, okay, this is a build-a-wall crowd. And I don't talk politics on stage. I never talk politics on stage. Off stage, I am very political. I am very opinionated. And I believe the way our country is going is the wrong direction. But you have a crowd here in Chattanooga, you know, it's 99% build-a-wall supporters.
Mm-hmm.
So... you should know that going in before you do a joke like that.
Yeah, and I did. I had this whole act out with book titles I shouldn't have done either. Like,
I love... You've been doing that all week. And it's been dying all week.
It's been dying. It just doesn't crescendo. Like,
Well, the problem is I don't think they know...
dying all week.
I don't think people know their book titles.
I tried to spoon-feed it last night. These are book titles.
When you go... here at Sweet Valley High, I'm going, no one knows that's a series of books. I know. It's sad that I know them because they're for girls, but I know that's Sweet Valley High. And I go, you did that on Thursday. It went okay. You did the first show Friday. It went okay. And then it just went downhill. I'm like going, but I respect you because you're going, I am doing this bit. I am hammering this bit through because the whole bit is almost for the one line at the end. His kills at the library. I love that line. That line cracks me up. I can't wait for you to do the bit just so I can hear you go, that kills at the library.
You see, I like doing that bit because it's an exercise. I want to get more animated on stage, which is why I like watching you, and you almost like provoking laughs off of gestures, or you're provoking response on your physicality.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get more like multidimensional in my show like that.
Which is why
that's good exercise.
Which is why when you do the concussion bit about being tackled,
yeah,
that bit is something that should be one of the first 5 minute jokes in your 5 minutes. Within 5 minutes, you should be doing that joke.
Okay.
Because you should be talking, if you want to be biographical, you want to be a storyteller, you got to tell people that used to be bigger,
right.
Used to be 240.
Uh-huh.
You're what, 6'7"?
6'4".
6'4"?
6'4".
6'7" in heels.
Or platform shoes.
Oh, platform.
I borrow your platform shoes.
No, those are my platform shoes.
Yeah?
So.
Yeah, keep going, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just make sure we're still
hot
there.
Breath. That'll be an edit. So when you open up your show being biographical, being, you know, a storyteller, you should talk about I went to Division III school,
mm-hmm.
you know, I used to be 240, blah blah blah, and then you should be talking about I used to play football at the Division III school and do that whole bit. I do that a whole bit about, you know, 60-40 women mm-hmm. and men, all that stuff. And then go, I actually played football. I know it's hard to look at this body now, but I used to be 6'4", 240. And I never got a concussion. And everybody's talking about, oh, concussions. I never ran fast enough to get a concussion. And then you do that whole bit.
Right.
Because that whole bit is just great. It is such a good bit. And the whole idea about you tackling the mic stand and your head is a, neck is a shock absorber.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant. And then you turn around and then you're sort of like humping.
Yeah, that all happened this week. That all evolved into it.
It's really, really good. and then you do the line in the like you're in the, and then when you have them grab, you have them wrapped up, you go, I'll see you in the shower.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And then you do like a little pat on the butt, good game. You know, whatever you do, it's really, really good. It sets a tone for what your show is going to be.
Okay.
It sets a good tone, and then once the crowd is on your side, once the crowd likes you, you can do everything about the accents, about Chinese, about, you can do all that stuff because the crowd likes you. They like you. They're not going to unlike you. Once the crowd likes you, they're not going to unlike you.
Wow.
It's true.
That's gold.
Once they like you, they're not going to unlike you because they go, I like this guy. Well, that joke wasn't so good, but I like him. I like him. And that's the key. You know, they're not going to unlike you. It's very rare that you're killing for 15 minutes and the crowd then starts booing you and tells you to get off stage.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. It's rare.
Okay.
But once they like you, they're going to always like you.
So be thinking of like comics when they're thinking of their opener. It's like, well, one, have an opener that's like guaranteed laughs, but also that
you, sets a tone.
That sets the tone for their entire show and
right.
what the audience is in for,
right.
I guess.
Right. A lot of comics are told, save your best joke for last. I completely disagree.
Hmm.
I can, because if your best joke is the last thing they hear and you've been sucking for 20 minutes, they've tuned out.
Right.
One of your best jokes, that's why I say a band like Kiss or Prince or whoever the big star is, when they open the show, they open up with one of their biggest hits. Kiss opens up with Detroit Rock City or Love Gun. That's one of their big hits. You know, Prince opens up with Let's Go Crazy, maybe his biggest hit.
Mm-hmm.
Sets a tone for the evening. Comedians have got to do the same thing. You can't hold your best joke in reserve. You got to open up within the first 5 minutes. Your one, if not your best joke, at least one of your top three
mm-hmm.
that you know is going to kill. Well, you'd be like going, oh, I'm not, how am I going to close a show? If your whole show is based on one closing bit, you're not ready to be on stage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
wow.
I mean, my show literally has five closers. I got five. There are five different bits that I have that I can close my show with. Literally. I mean, I got my big finale, which is obviously a closer. I can close the show with the marshmallow bit. I have. I can close the show with the straitjacket bit. I have. I can close the show with the McGruff the Crime Dog. I have. I can close the show with a bit that I have not done all week, which is this mind reading bit where I sing When Doves Cry. These are all closers. These are legitimate end the show thunders round applause closers.
Mm-hmm.
None of them are, but they're spaced out throughout the show. Like it's like you go to a fireworks show and the fireworks are boom 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 boom.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't save all my best jokes the last 5 minutes. That's silly. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. So you need to open up your show with one of the big jokes in your show.
Do you find what I've noticed in not only when we met last time and then you were so generous to like in the office, you like, let's have them back open for me when we're here in August, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
well, I liked you immediately. You're a good writer. You're a great writer.
Like the see, I want, and when I was talking to Rich Voss, he was like, most comics talk from the head and not from the heart. So I'm trying to insert the heart into it with all the autobiographical stuff now,
right?
And kind of combine that writing with like the heart behind it, though.
It's true, but Rich Voss, what Rich Voss is basically saying in that comment, and I'm trying to get in his head, is again, speak to what you know.
Right.
You know what? Who is Joel? Who is Comic X? Speak to what you know. Speak from here. If you believe it, the audience will believe it. If you do a joke, if you do a joke about being abducted by aliens, anybody knows it's a lie. Every joke has to have a shred of believability. Every joke. No matter how outlandish it is, every joke has to have a shred of believability. Because if it doesn't, the crowd will know you're lying. And they know that's not real. And that's, to them, is not funny. They want to believe it. They want to believe that you really tackled the guy and said, I'll see you in the showers. Did it happen? No. But could it have happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
that,
true.
That's what's funny. That's where the fun. Could it have happened?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could have happened. Like, I do a joke about, you know, dialing the fire department by using a rotary phone.
Right.
Me going 7-3. Did it really happen? No. Could it have happened? Yes. Uh-huh. And that's why it's so funny.
And you're a working comedian. And this is like
Well, listen, you're a working comedian.
And I'll clarify it, because this has come up more and more on the podcast, and I was just talking with Robert Kelly about this.
Great guy.
That, like, yes, so nice. And he would roast me a lot, but that's endearment from him.
Yeah, it is.
But him and several other comics have been harping more on, like, you're not trying to be Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart is not, he's not the benchmark. The benchmark is to create a living doing what you love, which is comedy. It's not trying to become like the 1% of comedy. It's like creating a sustainable career around this craft. And
someone,
26 years after I discovered you, and then this guy is always booked. Consistently working, like, you're a successful comedian.
Yeah, I think so.
You are, and that was a big mindset shift for me. That's like, oh, Kevin Hart isn't. The goal is to make this like a livable job, like to make this.
We all can't be Warren Buffett. We all can't be a CEO.
Yes. And I think more comedians need to understand that mindset, that like, make this your job. And
you can make You can make this a career. You can make a career out of comedy. It takes determination. It takes hustle, it takes ambition, and it takes perseverance. Probably perseverance should be maybe number one.
Perseverance.
Because you will get rejected. I've been fired. I was fired from a comedy club called Knuckleheads in Minneapolis. Rich Miller, Dennis Miller's brother, fired me. Thought I was horrible. And it was early in my career, 1999. Early in my career.
How many years into your career was that?
Six
years. Yeah. Okay.
But I was still, I hadn't figured out exactly. It was right after that firing that I created the Midnight Swinger.
Huh.
Because I knew that there was something wrong. I was doing something wrong. But I used that as motivation, because I wanted to tell him F you later. Mm-hmm. And I did. I was able to, not F you directly, I was able to reach a level where he called me up and he did not remember me at all.
Oh.
And I was like, no, I'm not going to work for you.
Wow. And to be the power to say no is what, having the ability.
The word no is the most powerful word.
Wow.
It's so powerful. So,
okay.
Again, you can make a living, a career, a good career out of doing comedy if you put as much effort into it as if you would if you were a young manager at a corporation and you wanted to work your way up the corporate ladder. So you think to yourself, okay, I just graduated college, I've got a bachelor's degree. Company hires me, that's called Company X, it's a law firm. They hire you as a paralegal, whatever. All right, you then go to school, you get your degree, you pass the bar. Okay, we're gonna hire you as a lawyer. And okay, we're gonna give you these really horrible cases. You're gonna be writing briefs. The next 5 years, you're just writing briefs, but you're getting experience. And they say, okay, we're going to give you a case. We're going to give you an application to try. And they move up. And they move up. Okay, now you're actually bringing in clients. You're actually going to bring us in clients. Now you're making us money. We're going to make you vice president. We're going to make you an executive. And we're going to put your name on the door.
Mm-hmm.
You may never be the owner of that law firm, but you're now making a living as a partner in that law firm. Think of comedy the same way. Open mics, guest sets, grunt work, biker bars, outdoor music festivals, the worst shit gigs you could possibly think of. You do those for a couple years, but you're cutting your teeth. You're cutting your teeth in situations where you have to learn how to think on your feet. Every crowd's different. And all of a sudden, it's like someone like me, not trying to pat myself on the back, you work with someone like me. I dig you. I want you to work with me again. I tell Globo, put Joel back on the show in mm-hmm. August. And now you've worked this club twice. It's like, okay, now the club knows you. And now you start working, you know, and now people start seeing your name. It's like, okay, I'm not headlining. I'm not a superstar. I'm not a special event, but I'm featuring consistently. All right? You do that for a couple of years. You start making connections, because this business is all about connections. You start making connections with other comics. Comics like me, who have the power to say, I want Joel on the show. I'm going to bring Joel with me. Joel's going to open for me. the clubs, if they respect me, and most of them do, will go, if you say Joel's good, he's on the show. They won't even ask for a tape. Mm-hmm. They'll go, yep, you said Joel's good, pop on the show. And he's like, okay, nice, I think now you're going to be featured. And all of a sudden you go, listen, I'm going to be there Friday and Saturday, but they need you Wednesday through Sunday, so you're going to headline Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday. And all of a sudden, okay, now you're split weeking. Now you're headlining on Wednesday and Thursday and Sunday, and I come in on Friday, Saturday, you open for me. And all of a sudden, okay, they see the headline. And now, and we're talking 10, 12, 14, 15, 18, 20 years. Within that time, you are moving up the ladder, and the whole time you are making a living doing comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's perseverance, that's ambition, that's drive. And that's what this is about.
I knew this was going to be one of our best episodes because just because of the talk we had last time we worked together. I was like, this guy is a well of information, and I can tell you care about comedy and you care about comedians.
I do.
Like, you're just...
I don't care about all comedians.
You care about helping the ones that...
When I see passion.
You know will, like,
when I see passion.
Apply it. Yeah.
No, when I see passion, more than anything else, I don't need to see funny. Huh. I know funny. I know what someone can do. I see what's on the stage. What I look for is passion. Is this what they want to do? I know somebody who's just doing this as a part-time gig. Nothing but respect for them. Nothing but respect. They're not trying to get on the road. They're not trying to, you know, create a show. They're not looking to travel the country. They want to work within 5-6 hours of where they live. That's who they are. And I respect that. That's the life they chose. And maybe it's because, you know, they're married. They've got kids. They got into the game late. Nothing wrong with it. They have a type of passion, but not what I'm looking for. You, when I met you for the first time, and we had never met before,
mm-mm,
you were actually a cancellation fill-in. Someone who else was...
Yes, I was.
Yeah. And I don't know who that comic was who you filled in for. Someone canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we're going to bring... Hey, I can't do it. This guy Joel is going to come in and do it. I don't know who he is, but it reminds me of the story when... The quarterback gets injured and the backup quarterback comes in. Because this guy who canceled, you know, may have been you. May have been you. And I'd be talking to him right now.
Right.
But I saw your passion. I saw you on stage going, this guy loves comedy. I could just see it. I mean, you, and again, this is no disrespect. And please don't take this way because it's meant to be a compliment.
No, no.
You weren't blowing the roof off the joint. You weren't getting standing ovations. Crowds dug you. And you were funny, which is important. But what I saw above everything else was that you loved being on stage. You were actually looking forward to hearing your name and walking on stage. You had a smile on your face when you walked on stage. I've seen it every night this week, too. You walk on stage with a smile. I seen some comics walk on stage just looking pissed. I'm like, going, why are you angry?
Yeah.
Why are you? You're living a dream. You're on stage at a well-respected club in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some people will call this club one of the top 10 clubs in the country. It's been around for 30 years.
Yeah.
Rooms are packed. This is a club that if you say the Comedy Catch in Chattanooga, people go, oh, I got to get into that room. I got it. Who do you know? You know, I mean, I had a comedian message me on IG going, oh, by the way, IG, Instagram, yeah, at I am Mr. Showtime David Scott. Please follow me.
Oh, yeah.
who said, oh, my God, I've heard nothing but amazing things about this club. Can you get me in?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm
right.
Not sure if I dig your style.
Right.
But my point being is that, you know, you should be walking. You walked on stage with a smile. You were happy. You delivered every joke like you meant it. And I'm like going, I like that guy. That guy's got passion. So I took you aside and I talked to you. And then after the show on Sunday, we're talking to Danielle in the green room. I'm coming back in August. I say, put him on the show. And Danielle's like, you sure? I'm like, absolutely. Just put him on the show. You're right there. So, you know, you got booked like 7 months. You had a booking 7 months.
Felt so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, and I would vouch for you again. Any club that asked me about you, I'm going to say, yeah, strong feature. Put him on. So
wow.
I think it's just it's a compliment to you because I see your passion. I see your love for the business. And
you can do comedy like, you can treat comedy like karaoke if you want to. Nothing wrong with that. You can go out to the open mic night and kill it for 3 minutes, just like someone goes to karaoke and kills Tiny Dancer by Elton John.
Mm-hmm.
They're never going to record that song. They're never going to be a professional singer. They're not going to tour.
Right.
But for 3 minutes, they kill Tiny Dancer and they feel good about themselves. If that's how you want to do comedy, God bless you. Good luck to you. Thank you for having fun doing this. We need people like you in this industry. Somebody goes to karaoke and destroys and goes, I'm going to record that song. I'm going to put that song on YouTube. I'm going to do my version. And starts promoting themselves. That's passion. So, and you doing what you do, especially with this Hot Breath podcast, because when we started talking, this thing was just very tiny. It was very little.
Mm-hmm.
And within 7 months, it has blown up. You've had Cedric the Entertainer on this show.
Yeah.
I mean, it shows that passion. Passion. Now I'm going to do something that no one's ever done on your show before. I'm
going to
eat corn on the cob during a podcast. There's nothing less sexy than eating corn.
And there's no way to like halfway eat it. It's like it's all your mouth.
Yeah,
it's your entire mouth.
It's kind of like, you know, going on a hot air balloon ride. You know, it sounds romantic. Until you realize that you're not alone. There's some guy controlling the balloon, you know, with a beard going, sorry, you're going to kiss her?
Let's let you enjoy that.
No, we can keep on talking.
I was just thinking of any...
It's kind
of
cold.
Kind of closing... or any other advice you have for comics. I know you're full of information. It's like... Is there anything that you have found to be most helpful that you've learned, or any closing advice you can share for comics?
Well, the standard advice, I hear this a lot, and it's boilerplate advice. And before I go, I'm going to take a drink before the corn's at the top of my mouth.
Of course. I'm eating chicken as we... This is now the food cast.
Yeah. As I'm wiping food on my mouth, as we go, hot breath. And you do a quick wipe.
Look at it. I love when people know the show that are on the show. That's so cool.
A standard boilerplate response to young comics is, keep on writing. Always keep writing. Always keep writing. Always keep writing.
You hear that a lot.
And I'm like, that's the advice you give to somebody who you really don't want to give advice to. And I know it sounds cruel.
That should go to line too.
Yeah. It's kind of like you go get them. It's like when you're playing football. You know you're gonna get your ass kicked. You know, but your dad goes, "Have a good game." You know you're gonna lose by 87. It's like when Alabama plays some Division II school, and the coach, I go, "Okay, guys, this is Alabama. The number one team for the past decade. But I don't have to say anything else except have a good game.
Because
it's going to be a long hour." And then Alabama always lets them score the first point, and then the end of the score is like 116-7.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
So what I would tell young comics, and I love working with young comics. I love helping out young comics, especially when I see passion.
It's really helped me out.
So, well, I help out Larrick, you know, help you with some bits and some jokes and some timing. I would say, more than anything else, nothing is better than stage time. There is nothing that you can do more to advance your career than stage time. And I mean any stage time. If you believe that you can only improve as a comedian by doing shows at comedy clubs, you are not gonna make it in this business. So you've gotta find places to do shows. Even if that means, and I know I've said it to some people, even if that means putting on a show at a friend's barbecue where you know there's gonna be 50 people on the microphone, stage time will make you a better comedian, better, more than any one other thing you could do. You can write your ass off. You can write the best jokes ever. If you're not telling them on stage, it's wasted. There's no, what's the point? So if there is an open mic, not a comedy open mic, I'm just saying an open mic. I was 1993. This is a great story. 1993. I'm living in LA. Place called the Inland Empire, Rancho Cucamonga, California. Where I got married. I actually got married at the courthouse in Rancho Cucamonga. Surprise, that marriage didn't work out. But this is 1993. I had just graduated from college, 23 years old. I moved from Columbia, Missouri, where I went to school.
Do you have any dessert up here today?
No, we're good. Thank you.
Alrighty. I'll need a box.
I'll need a box.
Yeah.
No, I'm good.
Let's go drinks.
No, I'm good.
All right. Separate checks. Last question.
No, I got it.
He said he really is famous.
Oh my God! I've got $30. I've got $30 on me. I must be really rich.
My dad's famous.
He said it so like on the way out to like a fadeaway. Oh, he really is.
Like, just, what's that? At the buzzer.
Yes. Yeah, that was so good.
Hot breath. So it's 1993, and I said stage time is important. We'll wait for
that box right there.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, man.
Give you the famous guy.
And the famous guy will pay down there at the front counter whenever you're ready.
Oh, I'm very
appreciate it, man. Thank you very much.
My publicist told me where to pay. So it's night. Hot breath.
Let me guess. It's 93.
Yeah. So it's 1993, and I'm basically been in the business for. I started doing comedy when I was 16 years old in 86.
Oh my God!
Yeah, Catch a Rising Star was the first place I ever did my first show.
In New York? Catch a Rising Star?
St. Louis.
Oh my.
So, it's called Union Station. My dad was a Broadway performer. I've been performing since I was 5 years old. So I've been performing since I was five. But
oh
I was.
Oh my God!
My dad performed on Broadway, off Broadway. I was raised in the theater community. Anyway, first time I did stand up, I was 16 years old. And then all throughout, high school, I was in the theater department, in college, but I always wanted to be a stand-up comedian. I actually wrote a paper when I was 13 years old that said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I wrote, I want to be a stand-up comedian. My mom still actually has the paper.
Cool.
And
so cool.
Yeah, I wanted to do this since I was 13 years old. When I saw Steve Martin live at the Universal Amphitheater, I said, you can make a living playing a banjo with an arrow through your head? How do I do that?
Wait, did you see him? You saw him live?
No, I saw him on HBO.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he'd already retired from doing stand-up by that point.
Man, he's one of my favorites, too.
Yeah, I love him. So, I'm just trying to get in, and L.A. is tough. L.A. is tough. And in 93, comedy was kind of on the decline. We had the highs of the 80s, and now we're in the 90s, and shows like Evening at the Improv, Caroline's, Comedy Central, people are now watching stand-up on TV, and the comedy club scene was dropping down.
Oh, wow.
So it was hard to get work. There was a time when you could literally just open up a bar, stick a banner outside that said Comedy Night, and the place would be packed. There was a time.
Wow.
Not anymore, but there used to be a time. Those are the golden years in the 80s. So in 93, I'm just trying to get on stage. I'm working as a house MC at a place called The Laugh Stop. But
Houston?
No, in LA.
Oh, in LA.
They were actually two Laugh Stops.
Okay.
Laugh Stop in Houston, Laugh Stop in LA. It was actually Upland, California. They were connected. They were both owned by the same guy. So I'm working there as a house MC. But I'm just MCing. On my off nights, I really want to work on new material. As an MC, you got a very limited base on what you can do. And I'm just looking for stage time. Where can I get stage time? It was 4 o'clock in Rancho Cucamonga on a Sunday at a coffee house.
Mm-hmm.
The coffee house went full, packed, every seat taken, 13 people. Open mic day. Was it's actually open mic day was for anybody. You show up and you get 5 minutes. I want stage time. I want to work on jokes. I walk in there, it's basically a room full of California hippies saying the worst poetry I've ever heard. And I know this is cliche. One guy was fucking playing bongos, I swear to God.
Oh my.
The smog. Get rid of the smog. And I'm like going, and in my mind I'm thinking, I've got to follow that. That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, going, the crowd's gonna be dead. They're gonna hate. So I was actually doing a Sunday at 4 o'clock in front with 13 people, basically 23-year-old telling dick jokes.
Wow.
And the thing is, comedy is a lot like golf. You can play 18 holes of golf and suck, but you have one good shot, and you remember that shot. It's like, I'm coming back. Yep. In comedy, you could suck for 5 minutes. You get one laugh.
Yep.
You're like, I'm coming back.
Yes. Yes. It's exactly it.
So to everybody out there, and I know you do a comedy class, which I think is brilliant. I'm glad that someone's actually trying to help with young comedians how to write, how to start. I didn't get my water bottle, but
oh, the hot brother water. I have one in the trunk.
What I want, it's a warm water.
It's a hot brother bottle. It's a souvenir, man. Seth said he was gonna keep his.
I'm glad that you are getting people to do, and I've watched some of the clips on the IG story, and I'm glad you're doing that. And I don't know what actually goes on in the class, if it's just straight up writing.
It's performing.
But yeah, as long as if you are, but all I would suggest is make sure they feel like they're performing. Set up the room so it feels like a nightclub. Because if you're just performing in a bank, in a conference room with the windows open, if you're walking by, you don't feel the realness of what it's like to actually be on stage. So I would actually kill the lights, close the curtains, make people sit like you're comedy club. Get them to go, this is what it's going to be like. People are going to be looking at you. They're not in a long conference table doing this. You know, kill the lights, maybe get a mic stand, a microphone that's working with the PA system, a stool. You know, have somebody go, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your next comedian. Have a true MC bring them on stage. You know, get them to feel like this, and they go, and I've been saying this forever, never bring notes on stage.
Yes.
Leave, if you cannot memorize 5 minutes, you're not ready to be on stage. Leave the notebook at home. Leave it at the, you can bring it to the club, but don't bring it on stage with you.
Yes.
Nothing shows you as less of a professional than when you go, anyway, so, oh, yeah, so my sister, I don't believe that.
Exactly.
The only one who gets away with that was Richard Lewis, because Richard Lewis made a joke, you know, but looking at notes just makes the audience go, this isn't real. There's nothing real about this. This is fake.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a comic with notes on stage succeed, ever. And none of the pros do it. So when you do those classes, and again, brilliant, so glad someone's doing it, and you do performance, make it feel like it's a performance.
Yes.
Because I saw you do one was like going, okay, Jim's going up. Okay, go, Jim.
Right.
You know, move the table all the way. At first, I'd actually get rid of tables. That conference table, I don't think you learn in the conference tables. Just sit down, notepad, and go, just talk back and forth. I always feel like tables are a way to separate people anyway. So just get the look at the chairs, set it up, you know, almost have you teach the class from where the stage is, and you're talking to the people from the stage, you know, so they feel like this is a comedy venue. This feels like a comedy venue, and then they will get the sense like, okay, I'm gonna go on stage and tell jokes, and nothing is harder than telling jokes in front of people you know. Yeah. And other comics, because other comics will not laugh other comics, because they go, if I laugh at him, don't think that I think he's funnier than me, and now they won't book me. You know, I will laugh harder at another comic if I think they're funny, because I've got confidence in myself. If you have confidence in yourself, you've got no worries. My mentor, Kirk Nolan, back in 95, gave me probably the best advice I've ever gotten in comedy, and I'm going to share it.
Because
this is going to come off as arrogant. It's going to come off as condescending. It's going to come off as elitist. But when you hear what I'm saying in its pure form, you'll get it. When you're a comedian, whether you're the MC, the guest set, the feature, or the headliner, when you walk into that room, in your head, not out loud, in your head, you repeat, I'm the funniest motherfucker here. Doesn't matter if you're the MC, doesn't matter if you're the guest set, the feature, the headliner. In your head, you go, I'm the funniest motherfucker here. And if you think that, you'll start believing it. And then you will be the headliner, the special event. Because there's nobody in your mind who's funnier than you in that entire room. I've done shows with some of the greats, And before every show, to this day, I'm in the green room. And I walk up to you, I have a good show. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying in my head? I'm the funniest motherfucker here.
Have a great show. I'm funnier than you.
No, yeah. Not what I said. That's not what I said. That's the mistake.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's the mistake. I know you're making a joke about this. I'm being serious about this. It's not about demeaning you. It's not about demeaning the comics. It's about lifting yourself up.
Okay.
To make you believe. Because if you don't believe that you're the funniest person in the room, guess what? You're not the funniest person in the room.
26 years, that's the best advice. That's incredible how you can boil it down to just like mindset.
It's all about the mindset.
Oh my gosh.
Man, you probably, multiple times, we probably went up in our head, we're so worried about what's going on.
Oh my.
It can show on her face and show going on there. And if you just go up there with confidence, like it says.
You've seen me do 16 shows now.
Yeah.
Every time I walk on stage, what do I look like when I walk on stage?
He's undefeated. Yeah, it's you're undefeated. Seriously, and watching you work every time, it's just like, inconsistency.
We're not working.
Like, you bring it every single time.
Yeah. Like, you know what I say for every show?
I'm the funniest motherfucker here.
That's right.
I'm going to start doing that.
You should. Yeah. Every comic, I don't know why I'm talking to the camera, every comic.
Every comic should do that.
Every comic should do it.
And
again, it's not condescending. You're not saying it to me. You're not saying it to anybody else.
Right.
I'm not walking up to you and go, hey, Joel, I'm the funniest motherfucker here. Have a good set.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what I'm doing. It's in your head. If you can't lift yourself up, then you're in for a long night.
Well, I tell you what, man. This, what I love about the Hot Breathiverse is that they reach out to guests and they thank them or they say, you said this or that. And I encourage, almost more than any other episode, please do this. But let them know where they can connect with you.
Yeah.
Just like thank you or say you how helpful you were.
Oh, I love talking to comics. I love helping out if I can. But if you want to get in contact with me, Instagram, @IAmMrShowtimeDavidScott.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, but that's for the older comics out there over the age of 40,
mm-hmm.
@IAmMrShowtime. And my website, very simple, DamnILookGood.com.
Hey, you say that on stage and you're like, no, that's really
my website.
That's really my website. Yeah.
I've had that website for 15 years. I've actually had porn sites want to buy that site off me. I swear to God.
You wouldn't sell it though?
No, why would I? It's the most unique website name in the world. How many people say this? Oh, damn, I look good. I want that website exist. All of a sudden I get like a hit from like Uruguay. It's like when someone, you know, types in like I would if I could have that, but who's this midnight swinger, Mr. Showtime?
What made you get that?
It used to be my catchphrase.
Really?
Yeah.
For Mr. Swinger? Midnight Swinger. Midnight Swinger. Oh my gosh.
You can search
what a name.
You can search it. The Midnight Swinger, it was all about ego and attitude, Vegas. And the whole show was about me saying, damn, I had a mirror on stage. I took a picture of myself. I took a photograph of myself on stage. It was a great bit. This is back when there were disposable cameras, before cell phones. I'd have five of them. I'd four on my body, and I hid one in the audience. And I would just during the show, I would just stop. I would tell a joke and go, damn, I look good. Take a camera out, click it, and then throw the camera aside. And then, you know, 5-6 minutes go by, I'll do a joke, I go, damn, I look good, take another camera, click it. I do that four times. And then during my closing musical bit, I'd be in the audience singing Sweet Caroline, and there was a part of the music where the music would just stop. And I go, damn, damn, I look good. And I reach under a table, grab another camera, and take a picture. And the and the crowd's like, how many cameras does this guy have?
That's incredible. And now you strip like literally 10 layers. Like you have to put on that many layers.
I actually did a video. It's actually on Instagram. It's a sped up video of me putting how many layers I wear. If you include the underwear and socks, it's 9 layers.
9 layers every show.
Every show.
And it's undefeated. The show is undefeated.
My friend Willie Farrell, who some of you may have heard of, not the actor, the comedian, out of Des Moines, called he's the godfather of comedy. Search out Willie Farrell. He's brilliant.
Wow.
Brilliant. His entire show is almost all improv. It's a brilliant show. I love him. We've been good friends for 15, 16 years. I was in Des Moines recently, and he did not tell me he was coming to the show. He brought his wife, and they came to my show. And my buddy Dwayne Clark, who's my Midwest opener, him and good friends, and I'm on stage, and Willie is talking to Dwayne. He's like going, this is Dwayne telling me the story later. He goes, Willie walked in. Didn't want to know you were there. Didn't want to make you nervous. He came in after you started, and he walks in and goes, finally, Showtime has put on some weight. It's about time. He looks like, he goes, now I don't feel like the fattest comic in Des Moines. And then the show goes on, and then and he goes, and then every 10 minutes you take off another layer of clothes and go, damn, he's still skinny.
9 layers. That makes me think of Craig Shoemaker, the Love Master.
Yeah.
How his is like bravado, and like you're saying, the Midnight Swinger was that character. Mm. And he was on here. He said like the craziest groupie story we've ever heard on here.
Oh, really?
There was a lot involved in it. Him being the Love Master, I would imagine. I bet the Midnight Swinger, though, I bet you had some people after the show who were like, hey, you wanna...
I think, and not to get kill the buzz on the music, but no. And only because I treat this as a business.
Uh-huh.
You treat this as a business. I don't put out that vibe. I know there are some comics you put out the vibes like going, hey, looking to get high after the show, anybody's got some stuff, hey, looking to hook up. I know some comics do it, and they're single, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. Hey, we're all adults. This is show business. Show business. Take care of your business and treat it like it is. If you want to have a successful business, treat it like a successful business. You want to treat it as a hobby? Do whatever the hell you want to do. And I know that's not, I know we're kind of joking around, but
no, that's great to hear,
yeah,
though.
You have the show and you have the business. You've got to equally balance both of them.
That's cool. Mindset again.
Mindset.
Treating both that mindset.
Right. This is a business. This is the business of Joel Byers. This is the business of Eric Lewis. This is the business of Mr. Showtime.
Mm-hmm.
This is your company. You know, granted, the Christmas part is going to be very boring because it's just you, but you know you're going to get lucky.
Well, thank you so much for doing this, man.
My
pleasure. This was going to be gold. The last thing comics always do is they just look into the camera and let people know why they should listen to Hot Breath.
I think the best reason is the Hot Breath. This guy right here, this man, really cares about comedy, really cares about stand-up. And I would not be on the show if I not see passion in this guy. So if you want to learn about comedy, you want to learn about, and we're talking about all levels of comedy, from the mega stars like Cedric the Entertainer, to someone like me who's just a lowly Guinness World Record holder. The only one that's the only one in the comedy world who can say it.
How many hours was your show?
40 hours and 8 minutes.
40 hours and 8 minutes.
I'm not saying that's not the greatest achievement in comedy history. That's not for me to say. I'm going to let the historians decide what's more important, Heart of the City or longest stand-up comedy show ever. I'm letting you all decide.
Heart of the City. Heart of the City. That was so inside comedy of a reference. But every comedian's like, oh.
Oh, Kevin's going to be mad at me. That's okay. We're about the same height. I can dunk on Kevin. Although he does know The Rock, so I'm probably screwed.
Yeah, that's true. Good.
He's going to Jumanji me. So listen to this guy. He cares about comedy. He cares about what you need to make it in this business. So Hot Breath. And hope I'll see y'all again on the road soon.
We'll definitely be doing another one.
Absolutely.
We're going to be doing more of these for sure. So we'll get into the world record and all that on the next one. But this one, I just wanted to be raw comedy talk.
in a way this show hasn't really done, in terms of just like here in the middle of a meal, just like this is the truth about comedy.
Yeah, so not promoting nothing.
Thank you for sharing all
my
that
pleasure,
wisdom.
My friend.
My man.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Oh, Eric, great job. We had a live podcast today. Great job, Eric.
And, an audience member.
So, all right, Hot Breathiverse, get with it. Let them know where they can keep you up with you too, Eric.
Oh, I'm on Facebook as well as Eric Lonas. And Eric Lonas, the comedian. Just check me out. I do have a YouTube. It's called Eric Lonas. Just check it out. It's L-O-N-E-S. And that's how you can catch up with
him. All right. Well, comedians, reach out to Mr. Showtime. Reach out to Eric if you just want to feel good about yourself and your comedy career.
Especially Eric. He sets a very low bar.
But reach out to Mr. Showtime. Let him know how helpful this was and what you enjoyed about it. And share this with other comics. And we'll be back next Monday.
All right, brother.
Right here on Hot Breath. You both did it at the same time.
All right, Hot Breath of Verse. Hot Breath episode number 192. Officially in the books. If you enjoyed this episode, reach out to Mr. Showtime directly on all social media. Let him know how helpful this episode was. Reach out to him with questions. He is happy to help. He wants to help. I think my favorite tip he had on this episode was asking your friends to describe you, and that can really help become a mirror to how you're coming off to people. Super valuable. That's my favorite tip. I would love to know your favorite tip. Please reach out to us on social media at Joel Byers Comedy and at Hot Breath Pod on all social media. Connect with us on our Facebook group as well, the Hot Breath Comedy Network. There's listeners from all around the world in there sharing their favorite experiences and tips and tricks in comedy and what they love about Hot Breath. So we're building a community here, people. And with that community, it has been growing. And I've actually carried that community over to our own Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/hotbreathpod, there's early access to episodes on there. There's extra content like my favorite writing tips and just all sorts of additional content. There's also a way for you to start getting set reviews on there and shout outs on the podcast. It's just an extension of Hot Breath to all the hot brethren and sistren out there. So, with all that being said, we do this for the sake of comedy culture. So if you do enjoy this, sharing it is the best way to support it. You can also support it by subscribing to our YouTube page. That's starting to blow up. We now have over 1.1 thousand subscribers on YouTube. Go check that out and leave a 5-star iTunes review. If you're listening to it on the iTunes app, there's a quick way you can do it. Right within the app, you can also, there's a share button right within the app where you can start to share it on social media and share it with friends and family and comedians. But that's all for me, all right? I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to be performing throughout the country over the rest of the year. I'm coming up in Myrtle Beach. I'm going to be in Indianapolis soon. I'm going to be in Nashville. So go to my website, joelbyerscomedy.com, to get access to my full performance schedule as well as new merch. I've created some new merch. I have one with my dog's face on it. It's all linked from my website. If you go to joelbyerscomedy.com and click shop, it links to the store that has Hot Breath shirts. It has my dog shirts on there, along with some cool trophy husband shirts. So holidays are coming up. Get your gifts. I also have trophy husband koozies as well if you want one. Holla at ya, boy. I've never said that before. I don't know why I said boy. So let's get out of here. Those of you that listen for the first time, thank you so much. This whole show is like inside the actor studio for comedy. So if you enjoyed this one, there are over 190 other interviews for you to go back and check out. So please do check out the catalog, subscribe, share, and we'll be back next Monday. At the end of all these, I do thank my wife because she made the theme song for this show that so many people have commented on, especially on YouTube. People are really enjoying the song. So thank you to my wife, Erin Byers. And of course, thank you to you for listening and supporting and sharing. It really does mean a lot. Still in these early stages, almost 200, and I still feel like we're just getting started. So all that being said, I'll see you in the Facebook group. I'll see you on Patreon. And I'll see you next Monday right here on Hot Breath. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.